This is the meeting of the House Fisheries Committee, and we will come to order at 10:02 a.m. in room 120 on January 31st. I would like to welcome everyone and ask that you please make sure your cell phones are on silence. Thank you. Hi, Ian. Today we have members present: Representative Eastman, Representative Tarr, Representative Fansler, Representative Chenault, and myself, Chair Stutes. Let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business. We're also joined by Kelly Burnett from the House Records, Somers Cole from LIO, and my Fisheries Committee, Reed Harris. Please note at 11 o'clock we will gavel out and begin the Department of Fish and Game House Finance Subcommittee. That meeting will be chaired by Representative Ortiz. Today we have one bill on the agenda, House Bill 14, Legislative Approval of Bristol Bay Sulfide Mine. Presenting the bill is the sponsor, Representative Johnson. Welcome, Representative Johnson. Members...
Josephson.
Excuse me, Josephson. I'm sorry, Andy. Yeah, I'm sorry. let's see. Members have a draft of the proposed committee substitute, version D, in their packets. May I have a motion to adopt the CS as the working document, please? Representative Fansler.
Madam Chair, I move that we accept the committee substitute for House Bill 14. 30-LS0161-D as the working document.
Thank you, Representative Fansler, and I will object for purposes of discussion. Will the sponsor please explain the changes to the bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Andy Josephson for the record. The changes to the bill are basically two. The bill that was brought to the House clerk originally did not refer to the word wildlife on line 11, page 1, and it did not use the word modifications on page 2, line 8, and I think that the word wildlife was also inserted in section 2, line 22. And also on line 8, page 3. Those are the main changes.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Chenault.
Madam Chairman, what was the change again on section 2, line 28?
Section 2, Representative Josephson.
Section 2
of wildlife
was the use of the word wildlife on line 22. You should have a summary of changes too, or as well. And just to make sure I've covered it all, that summary, I won't read it verbatim, but it notes that there are three changes. The original version protected the fisheries. The term fisheries was defined within the bill. And the committee substitute has added the terms fish, I noted wildlife, fish and wildlife, to offer more broad protections to life within the reserve, not just those species and areas used by humans. And the other change, and I neglected to mention this, I'm glad I'm looking at the summary of changes, is that we refer to the entire watershed rather than just the reserve generally. And when I say the reserve, I mean the J. Hammond 1972 reserve. So now, for example, line 21, page 2, you see the word, it refers to mining operations located within the watershed of the Bristol Bay Fisheries Reserve. And then I noted the term modification was added on page 2.
We've been joined by Representative Christ Tompkins as well, for the record. thank you, Representative Josephson. If you go forward with your presentation, please.
Well, it was my pleasure. And
Excuse me, Madam Chair. Are you going to remove your objection from adopting the CS?
I am. Good. Thank you, Representative Tarr. I'd like to remove my objection.
So it was my pleasure and honor a couple of years ago to have this committee and this chair hear essentially a nearly identical bill with the changes that I've just noted. The context of this bill derives from a couple sources. One of them is the initiative which passed in 2014. And at that time, I presented the bill, I talked about a couple cases, Warren 1 and Warren 2, which describe how one might modify an initiative. Now note that I voted for and am a supporter of the initiative. I think that this bill takes the intent of the initiative and makes it stronger. I'm confident it does that. However, we're outside that two-year window, and again, it's with some real hesitation that I filed this because, as I said, I support the initiative as passed in 2014. I think, though, that this bill strengthens the initiative. It's certainly broadly consistent with it, in my opinion. What this bill does is it essentially, part of its goal is to say to major mine developers in Southwest Alaska, we all know that there's one in particular, there are really a couple, that the things that they've supported, that is the coexistence of mining operations with healthy fish, wildlife, and other valued natural resources, will be met. That is, that tough standard that they've said they want is one that the state also wants. For example, the Pebble Partnership has noted in its literature that it must apply the world's best and most advanced science. And what this bill does is it says, that's what we're going to give you. We're going to apply the world's best and most advanced science. And it does that by saying that the three lands commissioners, DNR, DEC, and DFNG, must have independently reviewed studies prepared. Those studies must be interagency, and they must be peer-reviewed such that they are scientifically supportable. So essentially, the major component of the initiative was to say that the legislature, the 60 of us, must vote to approve a large-scale mine in Southwest Alaska, a large-scale metallic sulfide mine. What this bill does is it inserts in the middle a high standard of review that is not there now before the legislature would see the bill. And in that respect, the legislature could have real confidence that if three gentlemen or gentle ladies say as commissioners, this project meets the toughest standards, then the legislature could have confidence that it does so. And that is something that has been a concern for me in our permitting process. And I asked, and I mentioned this in the minutes, you can see it in the minutes from the April 7th, 2015 meeting. I asked Ledge Research when I was a freshman to give me a sense of how often permits were denied, not withdrawn, but denied. And my statement then, and I think it was based on research I received, was that, and I could try to find this research, I'm sure it's there somewhere, in print, was the Division of Mining, Land, and Water had rejected 108 out of 7,971 permits it had received. Now, as we all know, often the permits may have very intense and onerous standards, and so I don't mean to suggest that those permits meant that a project was developed. I just mean to suggest that those permits were granted if the standards could be met. You know, one thing before I forget, by the way, is there's been some criticism that the legislature and the initiative could not, quote, target a certain part of the state. And the Supreme Court, in affirming the right of the initiative in Hughes versus Treadwell, said it absolutely could do that. And it said, and it made findings about the importance of the Bristol Bay Area. And if I could just read a few sentences into the record?
Certainly.
Citing a report from the Institute of Social and Economic Research, the Supreme Court made findings that the Bristol Bay sockeye fishery is the world's most valuable wild salmon fishery and typically supplies almost half of the world's wild sockeye salmon. The Supreme Court also noted, citing a case called Pebble Limited Partnership, which comes before, chronologically, Hughes versus Treadwell, that, quote, legislatures routinely must draw lines and create classifications. So one of the criticisms that's been raised is why, and I'm not sure that those who make this criticism mean it in a genuine way, but why wouldn't this high standard apply throughout the state? The Supreme Court has indicated that the legislature has the prerogative, if it wants, to say we're going to apply a different standard here than elsewhere. It's not a question of improper allocation, which is the legislature's prerogative anyway, but it's something that that is a legitimate purpose that the legislature can do. But returning to the bill lays out that, and understand that you couldn't very easily simply say this mine is precluded because you would run into some takings issues. But you can say that we're going to require these peer-reviewed reports and independent interagency reports, that each commissioner must make those findings, and that if there's any significant change to the development plan, the findings must be made again before the matter would then be brought to the legislature. And I would note that the standard of reasonable doubt may sound odd to those in the committee and those listening and those in the room. But there is some evidence, and I found some and I noted it on the record in April 2015, that the state of Washington, for example, has in some of its natural resource permitting requirements declared that that sort of standard, that is this high standard of beyond a reasonable doubt, should be met. And again, I would note...
Excuse me for one moment. I'd like to recognize for the record that Representative Newman has joined us. Nice to see you, Representative. Thank you, Representative Josephson.
Sure. I would note that the supporters of the most significant mine that's being contemplated have said we want the highest standard. So this committee has the prerogative and the privilege to give them that high standard. I noted that in forestry laws in Washington State, the high standard reasonable doubt has been used. And I cited to, in 2015, a Pennsylvania code, which is, for the record, 86.102, areas, quote, areas where mining is prohibited or limited. So here's a very, I know you have a member, Representative Fansler from Pennsylvania, and he may know that Pennsylvania is a mining state. They have a tremendous amount of fracking. They're a national leader in their fracking regulation regimen, and yet they apply in mines in the state of, or in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, a rigorous standard which says that, for example, within 100 feet, measured horizontally of the bank of a perennial or intermittent stream, the department may grant a variance from this distance requirement if the operator demonstrates beyond a reasonable doubt that there would be no adverse hydrologic impacts, water quality impacts, or other environmental resource impacts. So here, in a very analogous situation, a sister state, a mining issue, high water impacts, reasonable doubt standard applied. I'm told that the committee has an abundance of letters in support of this legislation. I would note that with the election of the president, it's commonly understood that if this mine is going to be advanced with tough environmental standards, it's going to be up to the state of Alaska and those people who live in the Bristol Bay Borough to be vigilant about those standards. We're not going likely, it's anecdotal, but it's strongly anecdotal, to get the protection the previous administration wanted to afford to tribes and residents of the Bristol Bay watershed. So those are my main comments, and I'd be happy to answer any questions your members may have.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Are there any questions from this committee? Representative Eastman.
Yes, through the chair. Now, I notice we've singled out Bristol Bay in this legislation, and I'm wondering, is that because we believe Bristol Bay alone is merits this increased level of review and scrutiny, or are we thinking more of this as a pilot project that if this goes through, we would later apply that to the rest of the state as well?
Through the chair, a great question. I think Representative Eastman, that this state is a salmon state, and there is a culture that wants to make it a salmon first state. And some of that is because if you read, for example, The King of Fish, you see that other salmon fisheries around the world have met their demise. And here we have a chance to not go down that road. I would say that there is vast concern throughout about the salmon fishery. That's why, for example, you have our lieutenant governor and many Southeasterners concerned about the water boundaries. And in fact, I know that one of our high-ranking DNR officials is meeting with Canadian officials soon to discuss that matter, and the Tahlequah Dam and all of those sorts of concerns. But as I said, the Supreme Court has indicated and affirmed the initiative, and we could have sorted this out for ourselves, but that it's not unreasonable for the state to say this area needs extra protection. And, you know, obviously in great mining districts like in the middle of the state, in the Fairbanks area, and Live and Good, and Fort Knox, and Pogo, you don't have the same threat to the greatest commercial salmon fishery in the world. And so I think that high standard is appropriate.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Seeing none, I will open this up Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome, Representative Joseph.
Thank you.
When I'm looking on page 2 through section 2, and it goes down into section 2.1, and it talks about the commissioners and the fish and game making independent findings, and then they have to do different reports to the legislature. Seems like a tremendous amount of more regulations that are going to have to added into the current regulations that we have. What do you envision them to be like, to say?
Well, through the chair of Representative Newman, they would have to make a finding that beyond reasonable doubt, there would be no, as the legislation says, and as the initiative currently says, that no type of fishery would be impacted. Let me rephrase, that no mining operation would constitute a danger to any type of fishery. And I would note that it's not just a great commercial fishery, it's a great sport fishery and a great subsistence fishery. And all of the privileges of ANILCA, December 1980, get wrapped into this discussion as well. And I think that's why the tribes asked for federal intervention. And now we can be the bulwark. We can be, because it's going to rest on our shoulders, not the federal government's, to protect this great fishery. But in answer to your question, would it involve more regulation? It would involve more findings. And the departments might have to report on whether they would have to promulgate regulations. But this is the most important environmental decision and fisheries decision in Alaska history, in my opinion. So if there's a little bit of effort involved in that, I'm okay with that.
Follow-ups.
Follow-up.
Madam Chair. Representative, you mentioned that it was these fisheries. You mentioned the federal regulations. I thought Pebble, these fisheries within there were on state lands.
Through the chair, they are on state lands. There's been some claim that they are in a mining district. They're not in a mining district. They're in a mixed-use type of district. They are definitely on state lands, and the federal government asserted or began to assert and was well on the way to asserting that there was a Clean Water Act jurisdiction that it could exercise. Could the present administration and the present unconfirmed, I think, EPA director want to pursue that path? I suppose. I'm told that the president's sons fish in the Bristol Bay watershed, sport fish. That may be persuasive, you know, but anecdotally, I don't think that that's the path that we're going to see history follow.
Madam Chair, just one other question for now.
Follow up, Representative Newman.
Thank you. Representative, on page 1, line 11, you change, if you add the words fisheries, fish, and wildlife, substituting fisheries there. Mm-hmm. When I read that, I looked at fisheries, fish. Could that be an individual, could be construed as an individual fish, the way that's written? Constitute a danger to a fish?
Well, I mean, through the chair, I wish I knew what, for example, Madam Chair knows about commercial fishing, Representative Christ Tompkins, I'm from urban Alaska. I have lived in rural Alaska a couple times. But I would read that as a lawyer, and I'd say, well, fish are the thing that look like fish, and fisheries are an industry. And whether that's plural or singular fish, I suppose it could be a singular fish. But we know that there are millions of fish in the Bristol Bay fishery. This isn't a discussion like the upper reaches of the Susitna-Watana site. It's not that sort of discussion.
I'm trying to get to Representative Josephson's intent on that. And, you know, with intent for fish or fisheries, I think we heard it could be an individual fish or fishes. So maybe we get some further clarification. And I believe we're probably going to be hearing from the department on this bill, too, aren't we?
We have here from the department. Let me look here. I don't see anyone from the department.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
If I could, just so I don't regret not doing it, may I make a couple other remarks?
Certainly.
Okay.
Certainly, Representative Josephson.
First of all, regarding the federal partnership, it's very important, I think, for the body to know that this isn't just about the federal partnership. The bill as written would allow for small placer mines. We're not trying to disturb the rights of Bristol Bay residents to to operate those sorts of mines. But I'm told that there are 11 other claims in the region. By the way, Donlin is outside the region. This is not about Donlin. It would not preclude Donlin. Donlin would follow whatever path Donlin follows. But it is not simply a question of saying, oh, the Pueblo matter has been disposed of. There are all sorts of mining threats to the Bristol Bay region. And the good people who served in this building in 1972 saw the need to say, we're not, without the highest standard of review, going to allow oil and gas development in this area. And so what I'm trying to do is mirror that sort of language with hard rock sulfide mining. And this is about, you know, a couple other comments. In the April 2015 meeting, I noted that the Board of Fisheries wanted to use, under Title V, a precautionary approach when it looked at a comprehensive policy for managing our sustainable salmon. And this is meant to sort of, again, mirror that sort of desire for safeguards and protections. And it does create a burden on the mining industry. There's no doubt that they would have to meet this high burden. But, you know, they're asking us to change the culture of Southwest Alaska permanently. And I think that that's a reasonable standard to apply. And I'll take any other questions.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Are there any other questions from this committee? Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll figure out eventually where I want to go with this. I'm not a lawyer, and so I didn't sleep in a Motel 6 last night or a Motel 8. But Madam Chairman, if I could, maybe get the sponsor to walk us through mm-hmm. a proposed change to a permitting requirement that the administration has approved. And what, I know we talked about a reason, beyond a reasonable doubt, but does that mean that in the legislative process that you have to have more than 21 and 11 and 1 to approve a project? Does that mean that we have to have unanimous consent of the legislature to be able to do that? And I'm just curious, Madam Chairman, what added costs are going to be assumed by the legislature? Because at this point in time, I don't believe that we have the technical staff or the technical expertise to overrule what the department is telling us to be the facts of the case. So, Madam Chairman, I've got multiple questions, but I know we have a short period of time to listen to that today, but I'd just like to, maybe if Representative Josephson could walk us through. Also, does that, any change to a permit, does that mean each time that has to come back before the legislature for an approval before the mining company or the department can go through with the next stage of the permitting process? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Josephson.
Through the Chair. Representative Chenault, let me start with the last question. I think the answer is no. My reading of the bill would be that those findings would be made dispositively. That is, each commissioner, but communicating with one another in this interagency approach I talked about, would, once all the modifications were in, and those are tightly defined in subsection 3, page 2, would have to make a finding. That finding would then be peer-reviewed. That granted, that would take more time. But it would come to the body once, that is each body once, for a 21 and 11 vote, just as you indicated. And the legislature, just as we do every day, would have a set of facts before it and have to decide whether to vote up or down. One would think that this, under this rigorous standard, it would then become sort of a trust question. And many legislators may say, wow, if this test has been applied, not only do we dispense with some concerns about litigation, because the backers of any hard rock mining larger than 640 acres could say, look at this world-class standard that we were required to comply with and that we did comply with. So one would think more legislators might vote in the affirmative. But I didn't jot down, you asked a sort of a compound question with a lot of different parts to it. But, I think you talked about the expense of this, and I do want to comment on that. Where there are fiscal notes, you have them before you. Some of them are zero. I do think that the Department of Environment and Conservation has indicated that there could be, indeed, in 2019, for example, DEC's Water Quality Division says that this might cost it $200,000. We've seen that we can absorb that sort of expense through a designated fund sort of appropriation. So we could require the mine to pay for that. But I'm reminded that, if I may quote from this case, Madam Chair. Quote, the report states, this ICER report, that in 2010, quote, harvesting, processing, and retailing Bristol Bay salmon and the multiplier effects of these activities created $1.5 billion in output or sales value across the United States. $1.5 billion. And so my argument would be it's okay to require that we spend a few hundred thousand dollars to preserve $1.5 billion. And I just think that future generations will say, good, you know, bully for you, good thing you did that.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Madam Chairman, as a follow-up to the fiscal note, if the department, I haven't looked at the fiscal note, so I will look at that as we get through the bill, but if the department can absorb it, I would like the department to tell me that they can absorb that cost. And if they are going to set aside a fund source to fund that, then they need to also state that in the fiscal note, that that's what their plan is to do. I haven't heard the department telling me that they have a lot of money running around. $200,000 in today's world is a lot of money. And so I would ask, as we go through this and look at the fiscal notes, that we bring the departments up and make them justify the note that they attach to the bill.
And we can certainly do that, Representative Chenault. As you know, this is just the first hearing on this. And you had some other questions. If you would like, we could see if we could get Doug Gardner on the phone. Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions for Representative Josephson? Representative Newman.
Thank you, ma'am. Just for a request, again, if we could have the department, you know, it's been my understanding through the years that I've been here that it's always been touted that the regulations that we have within the state of Alaska are some of the most strict and some of the best in the nation for already protecting the resources that we already have. So I'd like to get a better understanding of the department's feeling. Do they need more regulations and need more protection, both the DEC and Fish and Game, to do this job? I think that they, conversations that I've had with those departments, that it seems that they feel that they could probably get by with what they got are pretty sufficient. So I don't know if we need more regulations or not. That's what I'd like to find out.
Thank you, Representative Newman. We certainly can request that the department come to any further hearings on this. Are there any other questions? Seeing none, I will open up public testimony. Prior to doing that, I would like to note that we have here from the DEC Water, the director, Michelle Hale, who is available to answer any questions. Thank you, Ms. Hale. And I am going to try and take testimony. I will first take in-house testimony, and then I will try and take it based on the time of the call-in. I'm going to ask people to please limit their testimony to 2 minutes due to our time restraints here that we have today. So I have Deantha Crockett. And if you would state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Good morning, Chairman and Stutes, members of the committee. Thanks for the opportunity to testify. My name is Deantha Crockett, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Miners Association. AMA is the professional trade association for Alaska's mineral industry, which includes small family-run placer mines, large mines and projects, and the contracting sector that supports the mines. We're represented in 8 statewide branches: Anchorage, Denali, Fairbanks, Haines, Juneau, Kenai, Ketchikan, Prince of Wales, and Nome. I'm here today to provide comment on HP 14, which suggests amendments to the Bristol Bay Forever ballot initiative passed by voters in 2014. At the time the Citizens Initiative titled the Bristol Bay Fisheries Reserve was before voters, we heard from proponents who would strengthen environmental protection and enhancement for the Bristol Bay region by requiring the Alaska Legislature to take action for final authorization of a mine within the watershed. The bill is written so that such action would take place after the mine had obtained dozens of state, local, and federal permits required to move forward with mine development. We didn't choose to engage in opposition to the Bristol Bay Forever initiative because we believe the law is clearly unconstitutional. It violates the separation of powers doctrine, which specifies that the legislature enacts laws and the executive branch implements and executes laws. It created laws via ballot box resource management and not through deliberate technical consideration. The legislature must now review and approve permits after they are issued by the executive branch and after the technical experts at our regulatory permitting agencies have evaluated and approved them. This process is called a legislative veto, and the Alaska Supreme Court has repeatedly said that a legislative veto is unconstitutional. And additionally, as lawmakers, I'll ask you, does the legislature have the technical staff necessary to evaluate the complexities inherent in permitting decisions? Thank you. I appreciate Representative Chenault bringing up that question and the question of whether the legislature has the time in the 90-day session to thoroughly evaluate a decision of this magnitude. In addition to the flagrant legal issues, the initiative created was clearly special and local legislation. Why single out a single resource project in Bristol Bay? Why not have the same authority and approval for projects located in Cook Inlet and the Yukon-Kuskokwim drainage and the Copper River drainage?
Ms. Crockett, I'm going to have to ask you to sum up your testimony, please. Thank you.
Amending the initiative via this bill is only making bad policy worse, and we urge you to undergo significant legal review prior to adopting legislation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions from this committee for Ms. Crockett? Yes, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I'm just wondering on this couple of points that you made about the constitutionality of the initiative. Where you said you chose not to participate in the, you know, the initiative as it was being considered by voters. But since then, have you taken any steps to challenge the constitutionality of that? And is there something in progress? I'm not aware of. Thank you.
Sure. Representative Tarr, through the chair, in my testimony I alluded to, we did not participate in the public opposition to the ballot initiative. Mm-hmm. Generally, and I'm sure you've seen in your time, ballot initiatives targeting resource development projects are generally engaged upon by the proponents and opponents to it. We have in the past intimately engaged in ballot initiatives, but for this one, because the legal issues were so great, we anticipated that decisions would be made after the fact. It's actually very common. I'm also not an attorney, but attorneys say it's also very common for courts to make up their minds after the initiative has been completed on whether or not what the legal aspects are. So we chose not to engage in that ballot initiative fight. Since then, we did join another resource development organization and an individual in challenging it, and we did unfortunately lose that. We are still of the opinion that this has significant legal issues, and later in my testimony here, which I'd be happy to provide you with a copy of, Representative.
Please do, and we'll provide
point to that. I would significantly expect that should this bill pass, and someday when there is a resource development project, maybe not Pebble, maybe not even mining, in the Bristol Bay Reserve, to see more legal challenges down the road, and I would thoroughly anticipate that.
And just a
follow-up, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. The previous court legal challenge that you and this other organization participated in, where did that end? Was it a Supreme Court decision, so that I can just first go back and read it? And second, because I would know that particular to the issues raised by that court challenge, you know, that is fully decided.
Sure. Representative Tarr, through the chair, I can get you copies of all of that. It's been within the last 2 years, but it was a Supreme Court decision.
Okay. Thank you.
If you would provide that to committee, I will make sure all committee members get a copy of that. Thank you. And thank you for your testimony. Seeing no other questions, I appreciate it. next, let's see if we have any other in-house. Nellie Williams with Trout Unlimited. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, Representative Stutes and the committee members. My name is Nellie Williams. I'm the Alaska Director for Trout Unlimited. And I'm here to testify in support of HB 14 on behalf of our 1,000 members in the state, sportsmen and women across the state, and the dozens of sport fishing businesses who operate in Bristol Bay. The threat of large-scale hard rock mines like Pebble is nothing new. Alaskans, particularly those that live in Bristol Bay, have been living in the shadow of Pebble and many promises that have been broken for over a decade. That is a very real threat to the 14,000 jobs and the $1.6 billion economy that is currently out there. Over the past many years, Alaskans, led by local tribes and commercial fishermen, have repeatedly opposed Pebble Mine and asked for protections for Bristol Bay. That concern grew even more a couple years ago when we saw the Mount Polly Dam failure and the subsequent impact to fishery and jobs and culture there. And I also just want to note that 65% of Alaskans, including a majority in every precinct of the state, voted for the original language that you guys are considering today, and it's really widely supported across the state. Our current laws are not enough. I am a mother of 2 young children, and some of our happiest moments take place on rivers or in boats, like many Alaskan families. I think all of us in this room and beyond have a responsibility to make sure Alaskan families now and in the future have fish-filled rivers to use and enjoy. We can't afford to sit back and let a foreign mining company call the shots. I urge all of you and our state leaders to listen to and stand up for Alaskans and do everything in your power to protect Bristol Bay's fishery and jobs. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Ms. Williams from this committee? Seeing none, Ms. Williams, thank you.
Thank you.
Next we will have Abe Williams from the Bristol Bay Fishermen. If you would state your name and affiliation, please.
Madam Chair, good morning. My name is Abe Williams. I am a fourth generation commercial fisherman in Bristol Bay. I was born and raised in Naknek, Alaska. I'm here to speak in opposition to this particular bill. I think that a bill like this further politicizes a process that we have in place right now that puts borders around permitting projects in Alaska in general. That's very important to the people. You've heard from the speaker before that you know, they talk about percentages that support something like this. I think there's possibly a minority out there that has been overshadowed and not listened to, and it's very important that we don't create regulation that will further overshadow those voices and their ability to sit here and participate in a process that's very important to the economics of the region. You know, as stated before by others, I think that there's consequences to this. There's the separations of power issues and just layers of bureaucracy that we don't want to see in Alaska. And I'd like to point out, if this is the gold standard of regulation, then it should be considered for the other projects around the state as well. I'm all for making sure that our fisheries are safe and protected in a way that's meaningful, but at the same time, I'm very in support of resource development that creates sustainable economics in rural Alaska, which you guys are fully aware of is greatly needed. And there are many of those throughout the region that have a budget issue, just like the state of Alaska currently does right now. And creating a larger budget issue for the state is not a wise decision. So I thank you for this opportunity, and hope I've touched a little bit on you know, some of the concerns from my perspective.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I just want to understand, Mr. Williams, did you support the original initiative and you think that that is strong enough, or you were in opposition to the original initiative and these changes?
I was in opposition to the original initiative. I don't particularly care for initiatives. I don't think that it's a proper way of vetting regulation. I think you know, this body is this body in particular should be vetting and looking at laws and regulation that you know, your executives will carry out, and that's how I feel about regulation. So
thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Eastman.
Yes, through the chair. So tonight you mentioned being a fisherman for four generations, I think I heard, and is that something you plan to continue on into the future, and how does that inform your opinion now?
I do. It's in my blood. I got a bad habit. My wife would often tell me, she says, you need a better job to support your fishing habit. You know, the romantic vision of a $1.4 billion commercial fishing industry and 14,000 jobs in Alaska, if you travel throughout rural Alaska, it's certainly not reflective of those numbers. We have an issue where a large portion of our workers come from, you know, the lower 48, or in fact overseas in many cases. So there's a lot of work to be done on our fishery as far as the value to the region and the state, I believe. And I'm going to continue this fishery. I have three boys. Two of them own their own fishing boats. They have their own permits. And I have one that's young. He's just turned 16, or he'll turn 16 in a week. And he will soon have his own boat as well. And for, you know, for the record, I started running a boat at the age of 14. I find it hard to turn my kid loose at myself, but that's just me.
Mr. Williams, are you affiliated with the Bristol Bay Fishermen's Association?
Bristol Bay Fishermen's Association? No.
Oh, okay. I was just curious. We've got a letter of support from them, and I noticed that you put down you were Bristol Bay Fishermen, and I just wondered if there was any correlation there. Appreciate it.
Is that the BBFA?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I'm not affiliated with those folks.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you for this time.
Mm-hmm. We will now go to Mike Heatwell in Anchorage online. Mr. Heatwell?
Yes, hello.
If you would state your name and identify your affiliation for the record, please.
I'd be happy to. Chair Steve, members of the Fisheries Committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Mike Heatwell, and I work for the Pebble Partnership here in Anchorage. There are many underlying technical questions regarding this bill, but I'm testifying today to bring to your attention several higher-level issues with the Bristol Bay Forever Law and House Bill 14 that we're talking about today. First, as you've heard from others, there remains this issue of the unresolved question of the constitutionality under the separation of powers doctrine. As many of the reference, the Supreme Court talked about the separation of powers in their review of the initiative prior to allowing it on the ballot in 2014, but the issue was not under appeal, and that has not been determined. And the issue has also been questioned by legislative legal in previous iterations of this particular law. As you all are well aware, the legislature makes the laws, the executive branch administers the law, and the judiciary ultimately determines the constitutionality at question. This process, the Bristol Bay Forever Law in House Bill 13, turns this on its head, with the legislature reviewing permits after they've been issued by the executive branch, essentially creating a legislative veto. Second, House Bill 14 adds more levels of bureaucracy to permitting. It requires legislative approval for all permit modifications, extensions, or renewals, just to name a few. And should public procure permits to operate following years of the permitting process, it is entirely probable that under this bill we could be back in front of the legislature every single year. This really is an unprecedented level of scrutiny for any project. And further, the law politicizes permitting decisions and has many in the resource community wondering what project or region is next for this type of action. Last, this law sends a loud message of uncertainty to the regulated community and to any company seeking to invest in Alaska. Alaska is well known for having a stable, predictable permitting process, and measures like this send a message of instability. In conclusion, I thank you for your time and respectfully suggest that if there are issues or problems with Alaska's permitting process, they should be identified and brought to the legislature for a thorough examination and discussion. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Heatwell. Are there any questions? Yes. Representative Fansler.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Through the chair, pardon me, I guess I'm confused. We've heard testimony that has said that the constitutionality questions have gone up through our Supreme Court, which is our highest court. There seems to be this implication that there's still not a resolution on it, but if they've made a ruling, I find it hard to believe that it hasn't been set into stone. Can you explain that more?
Yes, Director DePanzler, through the chair, thank you for the question and the opportunity to clarify a little bit. The issue of special or local legislation was addressed by the Supreme Court in the roll-up to the ballot initiative in 2014. The specific issue myself and others have referenced today about the separation of powers between the branches of government was questioned and discussed briefly during the Supreme Court proceedings on the initiative, but as that part of it was not under appeal and in front of the court, they did not rule on that matter, and that particular issue remained very ripe for ultimately litigation.
Representative Fansler?
I guess, as a follow-up through the chair, if it's an issue that seems ripe for ruling, why was this not not brought up on appeal, and why was it not adjudicated at the time?
Through the chair, I do not know why it was not brought up. We can probably, through some of the people that were involved specifically in the litigation, ask that question and report it back to the committee.
I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. For the sake of time, we're going to only, unfortunately, have time to take one more testifier today. We will be having, obviously, another hearing on this. So our next testifier will be Lisa Reimers from Iliamna Village Corporation. If you'd please state your name and affiliation for the record, and please keep your testimony to 2 minutes.
Oh, thank you. It's Lisa Reimers. I'm with Iliamna Natives Limited, which is 15 miles from the proposed Pebble Project. And as you know, this Pebble Project has become a political project instead of just a resource development project. So this bill I'm opposed to because it's unconstitutional and makes a bad bill worse. And especially seeing the suffering of the families that have no jobs out there since Pebble has not been active, and the businesses, and not being able to pay for fuel, food, and basic necessities for their kids. And, fisheries, I did it all my life, fished in Bristol Bay with my family, and it stopped paying for a while. There wasn't enough money to make money off fisheries. It used to be, but it doesn't anymore. So people sold the permits. So when everybody throws out all these numbers about how much money it brings into the state, with our condition of our financials in the state, what does a fishery pay the state of Alaska? I mean, how much money can you take on the legislature? Can they take on more funding to do this type of decision making? Do you guys have that type of funding? I mean, this initiative has created such a disaster for that area, and really I can't even describe it. It has torn families apart where they have to leave Oklahoma to try to find jobs. I mean, but I believe the state of Alaska, I believe the federal permitting, the NEPA process, can do a good job.
Thank you. If you could sum up your testimony, please.
Well, I just think that they could do a good job with following up with this permitting. It shouldn't go through politics to decide on this, because it should be people that specialize in regulations, not politics.
Thank you, Ms. Reimers. Are there any questions from this committee? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. And unfortunately, we're going to have to conclude the public testimony today due to our subcommittee hearing, which will follow this hearing directly. We will take a brief at ease for a few minutes, and I will end our special fisheries meeting for today at 10:55. Thank you.